a new segment called Costly DIY Mistakes.
And listener questions up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list, featuring head-to-head tool challenges and your questions. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul. What a concept!
All right, while Brian is clicking around on his computer, I will welcome our listeners to episode number 61 of the Handy Guys Podcast. Brian, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Today, we're going to have a new segment called Expensive DIY Mistakes or Costly DIY Mistakes. In addition, we're going to answer a couple of listener questions that were submitted to us during the past month or so. If you have a question, you can contact the Handy Guys at
www.handyguyspodcast.com, or you can call us. And if you call us, we'll use your question on the air, perhaps, if it's suitable. You can call us at area code 615-676-0877.
And of course, you can also email us at us@handyguyspodcast.com. Before we proceed tonight, Brian, I thought it would be helpful to explain a little bit about our show, because I know we may have some new listeners this week.
That's right. We're going to have some new listeners from RFC Radio, and welcome, and thanks for having us on your station. So a little bit about the Handy Guys. Paul, do you want to tell them kind of what we do and why we do it?
Yeah, we're a 30-minute show, and we work with our fellow handy guys, handy gals. If you live in a home, certainly you know about trying to fix things, make things work, and we're here to help. We're here to talk about various home projects. We've done a lot on basement remodeling. We've done a lot on home repair, a lot on energy savings topics, and we will continue to do so.
That's right. And one thing, we give out the contact information at the beginning of the show. We respond to every question we get, whether it be on the phone or on email. If you call the phone number, you just leave your message, and we'll include it in a future show. And if you want us to follow up with you, leave your email address on the voicemail, and we'll email you back.
And don't forget garage time and tool test, Brian. We need to get back to the garage one of these days.
That's right. We do garage time, where we putz around in the garage and do some little project and talk about it. We do tool tests, where we'll compare head-to-head different models of saws or something like that, and give our impressions and what's good for the average do-it-yourselfer.
All right, let's get on with the show.
Yahoo!
Okay, Brian, first thing I want to do tonight is a new segment, and we call this Costly DIY Mistakes. Brian, we have a whole list here of mistakes that folks that like to do things themselves in their home make, and we want to not review all of them. We're going to just cover one mistake in this episode during this segment, and we mentioned a few also last week when we were interviewed for the newspaper, but we thought it would be good every once in a while to address a mistake that some of our fellow handy guys, handy gals make, and hopefully save you a few pennies.
Who would have thought?
That's right. So, like Paul said, we're going to do this maybe every week or every so often, and cover a different mistake each time.
Is it often or often?
It's often, Paul. That's what I said. Is it not?
All right. I won't put that in there. Maybe our listeners want to know. Maybe we're going to correct our grammar. Okay, so today we want to talk about one of the mistakes that a lot of DIYers, is that a word? DIYers make?
Do-it-yourselfers?
Yeah. What is one of those mistakes that they often make?
Well, in previous shows, we've covered quite a bit, quite extensively, things to consider when finishing your basement. And one of the most costly mistakes you can make if you're going to finish your basement is to not address potential water or moisture issues.
All right, so you're doing your basement and you just want to get it done, and you know it leaked, 6 months ago, but you tell yourself, oh, we had a really bad rain. It was, it was the worst rains in 100 years. It won't happen again.
That's right. So you go ahead and you put the drywall and the walls and the carpet and the nice bar and the home theater and all the goodies.
Jacuzzi.
Yeah, and then the week goes by, a couple weeks go by, and there's that 100-year storm again, and you got 6 inches of water, and your big screen TV is shorting out.
Right. So there's no reason or no point in finishing your basement, at least in a traditional method, with drywall and wood framing, if you've got moisture problems. And in fact, really any method. If you've got major issues with water, you probably don't even want to use some of the prefabricated synthetic type finishing systems, which we're going to talk about on a future episode, because it's still going to be a pain. You may have carpet, even if you just did tile and you use plastic walls.
Right.
You don't want to be
living.
You still
have furniture and boxes, yeah. And you know who knows what you might have
exactly.
on the floor.
Exactly, toys, and you got just having those moisture problems, you don't want to have to try to clean up. You want to try to remedy or mitigate against them before it happens.
Right. So what are the top few things that a do-it-yourselfer can do besides these expensive basement waterproofing contractors and so forth?
Right.
What are the top things you can do to mitigate water sure. coming in your basement, Paul?
Well, there's a couple things. One is the obvious about the grading outside your house. You want the yard to be flowing away from the walls. Depending on what kind of wall, basement walls you have, if you have a poured concrete, you know, water can still penetrate it. If you have some older homes around here have fieldstone or they'll have cinder block, water will really penetrate that if you have it puddling up near the house. Or if your drainage, your downspouts are, you know, releasing water right near your house.
You know how many times I've seen that where someone has gutters and downspouts and the water just gets dumped right next to the foundation. And where does it go? Between the dirt and the wall, right down and right into the basement.
Yeah.
So you've got to extend those out from the wall. 4 to 6 feet is good. And you've also got to, like Paul said, make sure the grading is sloped away. Make sure your gutters aren't clogged and that they're working properly. Make sure you don't have excessive buildup, mounds of mulch that are holding the water back against the house. And that's going to take care of 80, 90% of water in your basement if you can just address those few things.
You know, just to give an example of this, I had a fieldstone house foundation. And if the hose bib, where the hose was connected outside, if it leaked, you know, the hose wasn't on tight, and you just had a trickle, or a little bit more than a trickle, after a while, it would run right into the basement. It just went right through.
It just finds its way down there.
So the point is, it follows the wall down, and obviously if I had a poured concrete basement, it would be maybe not as bad, but it will find its way in. So when you have a lot of water coming down a downspout, you want to keep it away from the house.
Yep, good tips.
So that's just one thing you can do. There's other systems, perimeter drainage systems, if you get fancy. I've even seen on that building science site where they have a stone type foundation or even cinder block where they use some plastics, like a tarp type material or some sort of plastic that's run under the ground at least a foot and then slopes away from the house down so that it kind of helps the water go away.
Oh, that's pretty
neat.
But
you can still grow your sod up near the house because you make sure it's underneath at least a foot. And I thought that was pretty clever. That would have helped me in my old house. But those are kind of DIY things. But, you know, the high-end systems are either going to put a perimeter drain, hopefully before you build your house, or if you've already, your house is built and you have water problems, what else can you do?
Well, there's French drain systems that these guys put in on the inside. And ideally, those are going to be gravity supported. In other words, the water, if it does get into that drain system, is going to be able to go out to daylight, out to the street by gravity alone. Sometimes sump pumps are required for below grade basements or if you don't live kind of on a sloped property.
Okay, so, and you know, there's other things you see marketed and sold, you know, various paints for the walls and other things.
Yeah,
but
don't
they're
do
not,
the paints.
They're not solutions. They're not going to help you. You need to get the water away from the basement if you
right.
can.
If you've got water coming in the wall and you put a paint on there to try to block it, you're blocking the water at the wrong space. You got to keep it from getting to that point. By that point, it's already inside and the damage is going to be done.
And I've also seen where the water table is so high that it's just below the floor of the basement. So sometimes it comes up through the floor and you just need to put in sump pump type system in that.
Right, right.
At a low point in the on the floor.
So. Now, in my new house, I put in exterior perimeter drains. All my downspouts drain into pipes. They go into a dry well. I have a quarter-inch thick rubber membrane on the outside of the foundation. I mean, what do they call it? The belts and suspenders approach.
Right.
And, you know, my basement has been completely dry. since I've moved in. My neighbor had 2 foot of water in it. He didn't put the same system in.
All right, so save yourself some hassle. Get that part done right, and also wait until you finish your basement. Make sure that you've solved any water problems, maybe a year, maybe two, maybe 3 or 4 years before you actually finish your basement. That's our DIY costly mistake tip for the day.
It's time for listener questions with the Handy Guy.
All right, Brian, our first question is from Bonnie. She says, and this is an interesting one, Brian, so I need you to listen carefully.
Okay, I'm listening carefully, Paul.
She says, my husband and I have been searching the net looking for an answer. And Brian, she couldn't find it on the worldwide internet, so she came to the Handy Guys. Of course, we're on the internet, but... So she says, our home has vinyl windows. They are probably at least 15 years old. So this year, in the last 4 months, they have started to literally explode. So far, 4 of them have exploded. We were actually home when 1 went tonight. It sounded like an explosion, as she already said, and we thought someone threw a brick in our house, which is what I would have thought. She says, after looking, sure enough, it had happened again. We can't figure this out. They are double pane, argon gas filled. No real pattern. Sometimes it's the inside pane, sometimes it's the outside pane. Can you by any chance tell us what is going on? Thanks, Bonnie. All right, Brian, argon filled, that's what's interesting. It's not just the outside pane, because I would have assumed it was the kids in the neighborhood throwing eggs or tomatoes or something like that.
Something crazy, something destructive.
Snowballs,
you know.
Yeah, but it's not always. It could be the inside pane. So, and no one seems to have the answer on the entire internet. So we need you, Brian, to step up, give us the answer to Bonnie's problem.
Okay, Paul. Well, my first inclination was like yours, that, you know, it might have been vandalism, you know, punk kids or something like that, throwing rocks and right. or something at the windows. But
that's what my son did to my window.
Right. Well, he wasn't a punk kid. He was playing with right. the baseball. But yeah, so, but given the fact that it was a double pane glass in the inside piece of glass is the one that broke.
Right.
So there's no obvious signs of something physical breaking the glass. So my thought is that the window frames are out of kilter somehow. They're out of frame. They're out of square. Something's putting pressure on these windows to cause them to be bent, curved, deformed in some way. And I can't confirm that with Bonnie, but here's one tip, Bonnie. If you have windows that are not broken, take a tape measure or a ruler or a yardstick or whatever and measure them corner to corner both ways, top left to bottom right and then top right to bottom left. See if those numbers match up. And that will give you some indication if the frames are still square or not. And that might tell you that something's going on with that. But the other comment I have for you, Bonnie, is probably the insurance company is not the first person I would call. I would try to determine what, Paul? What do you think I would try to determine?
Well, you can maybe see if the manufacturer has some sort of long, you know, warranty on parts. A lot of times they'll warranty, you know, their parts failure or something like that. And you can check with them and maybe they've seen this problem before too.
That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking, Paul. So if you can figure out, Bonnie, who the manufacturer of the window is, give them a call and see what they have to say. Maybe they have other customers experiencing the same problem. Maybe the glazing has a lifetime warranty on it. Maybe you'll luck out and they'll send you the parts for free.
I wonder if it was possible if you could have a leak of one of these windows and get some moisture in between the panes and have it freeze and expand and cause it. But you still think it would expand up in between the panes in it. But
yeah, and this
know.
Question came Strange. In on tax day, actually, April 15th. So the...
maybe someone, you know, maybe they were just
not
breaking.
Too much freezing going on in the U.S. She didn't say where she's from, though.
Well, maybe it was just someone screaming from doing their taxes.
You know, maybe something
an
like
opera
that.
Singer next door doing her taxes and was causing
yeah,
the
I don't know.
Break.
Maybe, Paul. Maybe.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Well, next, we have another question Brian. This is from Diane. And she says that I have just had a 95% high efficient furnace installed with a vent going outside my home. So when you put in a 95% efficient furnace, you don't need a typical chimney.
That's right.
You just put in a PVC pipe, 2 inches typically, and it has, what, a built-in fan. So when the furnace runs,
some of them,
it
they'll have a fan, and they actually have two pipes. There'll be one for an intake of fresh air and one for the exhaust of the you know, the carbon gases going out in the atmosphere.
So if I have a high efficiency furnace, Brian, why can I use PVC as opposed to stainless steel? In my 73% efficiency or whatever, 75% efficient furnace, I need to put in a stainless steel chimney. Do you know why I can get away with plastic?
Because there are fewer corrosive elements in the flue gases.
That's part of it. That's for sure. And the other thing is you're not as much heat as exhausting.
Right.
That's why it's 95% efficient. You're not losing a lot of heat. You're only losing 5% of the heat that's created by the energy.
That's right. So Diane, it was good choice. You're going to save on your energy bill. And but what's Diane's problem?
Well, her problem is an interesting one. Now, I see these vents. If you look around, just drive around any newer neighborhood.
I can just walk right next to my
house.
You can
find
one of these.
That's right. You have one. And I see them, and a lot of times they come out the side of a building, and then you'll see a plastic pipe with a little curlicue, right? A little,
they'll curve it down so water doesn't rain, doesn't get in there.
So they're not uncommon. You see them all over. If you haven't noticed them, just look around. She asks a question, which is a good one. She says, my concern is that a small animal could crawl into that pipe because it's typically near ground level. Because there aren't as many fumes and exhaust in it, they don't have to run it all the way up to the roof typically. Maybe in some districts and areas, townships, they make them do that. But around here and where Diane lives, they just run it right out at ground level and just leave it there. And she says, should I put some sort of grate on it? It's only 2 feet from the ground. What do you think, Brian?
You know, the standard operating procedure is that they just run these pipes right out the side of the house and they don't do anything with them. And personally, I've never heard of critters getting in there. Paul, you made the comment when we responded back to Diane that you know, there's no food source in there or anything like that that are going to draw them in. You know, maybe the biggest thing that could get in there would be a squirrel, maybe a small bird, maybe mice, you know, things like that could get in there. But
mice are usually looking for food. That's why they go in through garages and things like that.
Right. To get into the warm, but this is up off the ground as well. It's going to be kind of hard for a small critter to get in there, first of all. And
not a lot of air to breathe either when the furnace is running.
Right. You might be smoking them out. So, Diane, generally speaking, don't worry about it. There are some manufacturers make kind of more decorative covers if you want to dress up the side of your house. But that's not a standard thing from your HVAC installer. That would be an extra. But if you called them up and said, hey, I want you to put one of these fancier trim pieces on there, you would expect to pay additional for that.
Right. So, you know, call around. You might find something. Otherwise, I don't think I'd worry too much about it. It's only a 2-inch pipe. It's not like you're going to get much.
Yeah. Well, I think some of them actually might be a little bigger.
Yeah.
But regardless, if you are really worried about it and you want to put something on it, don't put screening on it. That's going to constrict the airflow too much, I think. Maybe some chicken wire or hardware cloth, they call it, that has a very large opening between the wires. You could put a little bit of that on there. And it'd just be a small piece.
The biggest problems I hear about these furnaces is when they run the condensate line outside the side of the house. So in other words, when you have these high efficiency systems, one of the problems is you get a lot of moisture that runs back down that PVC.
Right.
From when you're sending out heated air and you have cold air coming in, it creates moisture, condensate, just like your glass of your ice water right there, Brian. And on the outside. And so the water drains back and there you go. And these systems, there's always a collection point so that the water can't go into your furnace, and so there's
correct.
A little drainage area. It's collected. It goes through a tube, just like your air conditioning.
Right.
And typically, a lot of homes I've seen, they will pump it, have a little pump, and it goes out a tube out the side of your house.
Correct.
And what I've also seen is, when does your furnace run most?
In the winter.
In the winter. And when does that condensate for the heating, high-efficiency heating system build up the most? In the winter. And that tube's going out to the side of the house. Well, how hard is it for a little, small plastic tube to freeze up? It's not hard at all. They freeze up And then the thing, the pump just pumps the water all over your floor.
Right.
So that's a problem I've seen on these high efficiency systems. That's one thing you want to be aware of if you have one. The better option is to do like in your house, right? It's pumped right into your sump system.
That's right, into the sump pump drainage pit. And then from there, it gets pumped outside if it needs to.
Right. So that's one thing to be aware of. I know in one friend of mine had that problem, and I said, well, just take a hairdryer to it or something, because it was just piling up water, and that worked. Of course, it was only temporary until it got really cold again, but you might want to check that out. All right.
Want to be notified of every new Handy Guys podcast episode? Simply enter your email address in our subscription box at handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, a few weeks ago I was outside inspecting my home. It's springtime, and I know we had a show in episode 57, right?
That's right, episode 57.
On inspecting your home, spring home inspection. If you want to check that out, there's a great guide that we put out there that you can download.
It's on checklist. handyguyspodcast.com, and just go to episode number 57.
That's right, and so we talk about, we have a little itemized list of things to do when spring comes, as far as inspecting your home, taking care of your home, all the things to check for after the winter months. Well, there was one thing we didn't have on there, but one thing that I noticed when I was doing my own home spring inspection. I was walking around my house, and I noticed the dryer was running because I saw the little flaps on my vent. And I have a very long dryer vent. It goes from one side of the house, at the front of the house where the laundry room is. It goes down below into the basement in between the
joist,
thank you, and runs across the house and then out through the rim joist. And I thought, that's interesting. I saw the air coming through, and I said, I wonder how dirty it is. So I got on a stepladder, because it's actually kind of high in the back of my house because I have a walkout basement.
Right.
And I looked, put a flashlight down there, and it was full of stuff. The whole length, it's just stuff stuck, even though it's a solid tube. It's not the corrugated exhaust vent. It's still, it's all moist, and just over time, all of that lint just builds up and corrodes it. So I stuck.
You know, that's a fire hazard, Paul, and that's something we absolutely have to add to that checklist. and I am remiss for not including that in that show.
Well, what I did is I stuck my shop vac, the tube from it, as far as I could in the hole. I was like lifting it up onto the ladder, sticking it in there, and it cleaned it a little bit, but it's so stuck on there. I need to clean it out, and I don't feel like hiring a professional service. I think I can do it myself. It's probably about 20 feet long, roughly, the length. And I'm wondering what our listeners, if they have any opinions or ideas on the best kit to buy or tool on how I can clean my dryer vents. And also, you know, what your experiences are. How often do you do it? Is this a once-a-year job, once every 5 years?
You know what we'll do, Paul? We'll do some research on that, and we'll put something in the Handy Guys podcast store for cleaning that out. And you'll just be able to we'll have a link in our show notes at handyguyspodcast.com that'll take you right to the store to get the proper the cleaning apparatus for that. We'll do the research before the show notes go up.
And I'm going to clean my dryer vents, and I will also, we'll talk about it in a future show.
You can come clean my dryer vents too, Paul.
Fortunately, yours are probably not 20 feet or 25 feet long.
I think mine are only 4 or 5 feet long.
Yeah. So, and if you have experience with this, let us know what your ideas are. Maybe I should just hook up the hose? Just spray it all out of there?
Sure. Why not, Paul?
Want it be leaking all down through my drywall ceiling in the basement?
Right.
Unfortunately, there are seams, so I can't do that. All right. Well, we'll talk about that in a future episode. Well, that's all we have for this episode of the Handy Guys podcast.
All right. So remember, you can always contact us if you have any home improvement questions about lawn and garden, running your mower, you know, whatever it is. You can always call us, and we'll use your question on the air if we think our listeners might like it, but we will respond to you. So call us at area code 615-676-0877, or
you can Twitter us now.
That's right.
At Twitter address is Handy Guys.
It's at Handy Guys.
That's right. So if you want to send us a Twitter question, you can do that. I don't know how to work it, but Brian does.
Right. At Handy Guys on Twitter. or you can email us at handyguyspodcast.com, or just use the contact form on the website.
We also want to thank our new listeners at rfcradio.com. Check it out for live broadcasts at 9 a.m. on Saturdays.
Very good.
And check us out in future episodes. We're going to have your questions. We have some interesting stuff in the works. And remember, this show is sponsored by the Handy Guys Podcast Store. Check out our favorite tools and recommendations for items you can use around your homes at a great price through our Amazon-affiliated store. See you next week.
Thanks. Bye.